सत्कर्मय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मामृतं गमय असतो मा सत्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मामृतं गमय असतो मा सत्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मामृतं गमय असतो मा सत्गमय तमसो
Good afternoon and good evening and welcome, so much huge big welcome to our second teleconference after a week of hiatus during which so many people wrote that they were so happy to have extra time to work with boundaries and grounding and the investigation into anger and sadness. But I'm very happy to be back with you. And I'm also really happy that the extra time turned out to be a good thing. And I'm going to see how I can incorporate that piece of valuable information into teleclasses in the future. And also, I just wanted to say that some people wrote to ask if I was okay, especially because I did mention pain that felt like appendicitis last week, and it turned out it was. And first, I wanted to tell you that, yes, I am okay, and that it was really an interesting experience in recognizing the four quadrant, to use Ken Wilber's integral phrase, nature of experience. One of my friends, Stephen Walensky, who's a non-dual teacher, who's very smart about multi-leveled experience, always says we should meet a problem on the level of the problem. And of course, for me, this was a fantastic example of what that means, because the pain and the fact that because of the way the medical system around her works, I actually was not able to get the appropriate diagnosis for about 3 days after I would have been happy to have it. I actually got to work with the emotional components of the pain and also to work with that wonderful mindfulness, non-dual practice of feeling into what a painful sensation feels like and feeling the flowing nature of the energy. And it actually helped cement an understanding which, for me and I think for all of us, especially as spiritual practitioners, is really important to understand when we work with emotions. For those of you who are familiar with the integral model, the four quadrant it's called the Aqual All Quadrants, All Lines model. That's way too technical to go into now. But the key insight here is that when we're looking at any aspect of experience, we need to look at it through four different lenses. One is our inner subjective experience, which in this case would mean the work we're doing with actually tracking emotions and asking questions as to the messages that emotions are giving us, and also doing the inner work of meditation and breath practice that allows us to hold emotion, to create a safe space for emotion. The second aspect of it is to look at the physical, which is to say, in my case, the physical symptoms that I was experiencing. But in terms of emotional experience, also to be willing to look at, you know, the brain states that might be involved, the biochemical issues, the effect of diet, exercise, movement, the felt sense in the body of what happens when emotions are stuck and when they're moving. And the third aspect that, you know, that is very critical in working with emotions is to understand how emotions affect our intrasubjective experience, that is, how the environment in our family, in our workplace, in our culture itself actually helps to create emotional situations for us, how the intrasubjective experience is so important and key and such a profound way, part of looking at our emotional experience. And finally, the recognition of the planetary emotional states, the ways in which all the weather patterns, the planetary weather, the weather in our particular locale, the seasons, the environmental pollution, how our physical environment affects us emotionally, how we carry not only our personal emotions, but also the emotions that we take on from family and culture, and the emotions that are part of the nature of this planet, which is, after all, a profound and volatile environment that's always changing and that has its own weather. So it's a very good question to ask yourself. You know, do you feel sad when the weather's gray, or does it help you feel introspective? Does sunshine make you happy, as John Denver sings? Do you feel agitated and off balance when a thunderstorm is on its way? So just as your family dynamic and your personal history and your physical state affect your emotions, so does the physical state of our collective experience here on this planet. And I'm saying this because it's, even though we can only work with certain aspects of our emotional experience in these classes, that I really want to encourage you to remember and look into all four quadrants as they affect you. And my intention is to broaden this inquiry over time so that we're revisiting our emotions, the ways in which we work with emotions through several of these different quadrants. Spinoza said, "Emotion ceases to cause suffering the moment we form a clear and precise picture of it." And that's a pretty smart thing for a 17th century philosopher to realize. It's really what we're about here. So tonight, we're going to be working, as promised, with fear and somewhat with disassociation. And I'll be teaching you a new core practice, which is actually an offshoot of a type of practice that we've done in other classes. And we're going to start now with the chant with Krishna Das and Om Namah Shivaya Gurave, and then we'll do our dedication, our offering, and then we'll do a little bit of boundary and grounding and non-dual awareness practice before we go into the, so to speak, the nitty-gritty, or as my Indian teachers used to say, the vegetable of the class. So you can find yourself a comfortable, grounded posture. Welcome yourself, and just take a moment to be aware, to notice the breath, the way the breath is flowing. Sensations in your body, the felt sense of being in your body at this moment, noticing whatever residue of the day is present. And let's just start by grounding. So we'll do a brief grounding now, and I'll keep reminding you again. Again, remember with this grounding practice, some of you have been practicing kind of assiduously with it. Some of you have done it a few times. And for many of us, grounding is challenging for many reasons. One being that we might not be so great with visualization. Another might be that we actually prefer to be out of our bodies. So, but with this practice, as with the boundary practice, returning to it again and again begins to create a kind of imaginal reality that actually does create a subtle but very real grounding cord that connects us to the center of the earth. And after a while, it gets so that we can just return to it. And we can begin to recognize when we're not grounded, because we'll do something like stubbing our toe or bumping our elbow against a passing table, or spacing out, forgetting something, getting into a volatile emotional state that's unusual. So grounding, again, as we practice it, becomes a self-perpetuating process, a very powerful kind of guide that can help keep returning us to our core. So inhaling, feel your breath moving down towards the core of the belly. Moving up towards the heart. And then with the next inhalation, allow yourself to become aware of the base of the spine, of the coccyx. And imagine that there is a rod or a cord or a laser beam or simply a sense of energetic presence. Feel it at right around the area of the coccyx. And now this takes some focus. Imagine that with the inhalation, with each successive inhalation and exhalation, you're guiding this cord or rod or laser light of energy down through your seat, through the floor, down through the layers of the building if you're in a higher building, down through the foundations, through the soil, through the bedrock. Just stay with it, with the breath, inhaling and exhaling, guiding that energetic cord or current or pull down deep, deep down into the earth, down towards the center of the earth. And if you find yourself jumping back, forgetting, dissociating, getting distracted, just gently bring yourself back. Feel it as an energetic falling into the earth, flowing into the earth. See how deep you can take it. And when you get deep, let's say towards the center of the earth, even into the center of the earth, imagine yourself tying this cord to a rock or anchoring it or letting it melt into the bedrock down here. And let yourself feel what it's like to feel connected to the ground. And then you can bring your attention up into the belly or the heart, keeping your awareness inside the body, and we're going to chant Om Namah Shivaya Gurave, the invocation that asks that the ever auspicious divine presence that we call Shiva, the underlying ground of being, who is the teacher, the guide, who is the one who gives us the grace for transformation, whose nature is pure being, pure presence, pure awareness, and pure contented joy. We invoke that presence, asking that we be supported, that we be guided. Happiness and the causes of happiness, that all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering, that all beings know the sacred joy that lies beyond suffering, we ask that all beings experience the equanimity that lies beyond hatred, grasping, and dullness. We ask that we know the equality of all that lives. So imagine now that you are surrounded and nourished by your personal boundary, by the energy of the bright light of your inner awareness that extends out 6 feet around your body, even into the floor. And recognize this bubble, this energetic bubble, shield that defines your personal space, the individual space that contains your being, your soul, that allows you to safely rest inside. And for many of you, you have found that this boundary is filled with a color. It might be sun yellow or bright pink or clear light. And let yourself experience the edges of this boundary as very bright. Whether bright because you imagine them in a bright color, a vibrant color, or bright because you feel the energetic intensity of your intention to hold a boundary. And with the recognition of your personal space boundary, let's also hold the understanding that as a group, we are held within a circle, that there is a collective boundary, a big bubble of light, which again, we may be able to visualize or simply understand as a circle of experience that is the community, the boundary that holds us as a community, that creates a space of safety for all of us to interact. And in this recognition, we understand that the really threefold nature of our human experience, we are subtle energy packets, individual energy packets, protected by the space of the personal boundary. We are also on the ultimate level interconnected with everything. And we live in the paradox of our individuality and our connection. And at the same time, we're also part of a particular set of communities. And in this case, in this community, we are here together within the circle of practice, awareness, protection, and lineage energy that holds us together for the time we are together and allows our experience to actually be held and nourished in this collective container, this web of consciousness that runs between all of us. So just let yourself feel how your personal space and the collective space that we share are actually mingling and interpenetrating, but also protecting you and protecting us. And having recognized that profound paradox of our boundaried separateness and our absolute community, let's just open ourselves to the core recognition that lets us work with emotional energies. So as we know, as we've said, the true transformative tantric understanding about emotions is that emotions are energy packets. Tantra is really the art of playing with the different energies in our system, and that means welcoming them, understanding that they're going to arise and subside in their own way, and that, as we've said many times, when our energy is in flow, it truly is acting as Shakti, as the transformative intelligence of the universe, to inform us, to give us information, to protect us, and much, much more. So when we begin to be able to recognize that our life experience is arising and subsiding within one ground awareness, which is manifesting as our personal emotions as well as in many other ways, then we can begin to allow emotions and their energy to arise and subside and to welcome their arising and subsiding. So the more we can recognize, come back to, take root in not only our grounded energy, not only our sense of boundary, but also the greater non-dual truth, which is that everything is really arising and shining in our consciousness. And as it comes, it will go. The more free we feel in letting our emotions and sensations move, paradoxically, the more we can experience our own freedom in emotions. And that this is something I tell you from my own profound experience over years, and something that many of you know as well. So we're going to take another moment to do a core non-dual meditative practice just for a moment or two. We'll keep coming back to it, and it's also going to be our meditation for this week. So the breath is flowing, and just for this moment, you're resisting your tendency to space out. You're going to just stay with this experience, if you will. And thoughts might be coming and going, and you'll feel perhaps pulled towards one or another. That's okay. Just let the thought come. Let the thought go. And as the breath moves, just be aware of how thoughts and emotions and sensations are present and flowing. What sensations are you most aware of? The flow of the breath? The feeling in your gut or your tummy or your heart or your knees? Sense the way thoughts are arising and subsiding. And notice what emotions you're aware of without thinking that one emotion is preferable to another. Whatever is arising, whether it's happiness, peacefulness, anger, now we're talking about, you know, resistance, boredom, feeling like I'm not getting it right, all those things that go through the mind, expansiveness, openness, lightness, tightness, any of it, just breathe through your body and through the sensations and emotions, whatever they are, recognizing that it's all just here, it's all just happening, and allowing yourself to welcome whatever is arising, and notice that as you do, it arises and it subsides, it comes and it goes, it moves, it changes. And that some of these feelings are very strong, some of them not so strong. And as you locate a sensation or an emotion, bring the breath into it. Perhaps sighing through it if it feels like there wants to be a release, but not trying to get rid of anything. Just bringing the energy of breath into these feelings and places in the body. Welcoming, breathing. And see if you can open yourself with a set feeling of welcoming to the flow of pure presence that is living your life, that is holding your experience, and that's manifesting inside that subtle holding awareness in the form of body sensations, feelings of relaxation or tightness, emotions. And remember that there's irritability or anger present. As you breathe into it and welcome it, you begin to glimpse how it can transform into power, how it is power. And as anxiety or fear arises, as you breathe through it, notice that this sense of fear can actually heighten your attention. And as sadness arises, breathe through it. And realize its power to relax and calm and help you let go. You're present with whatever is flowing in your experience. your boundaries in place. You're grounded in the earth. And I'm going to read you a famous Rumi poem that most of you have received in your emails or read on the internet, maybe for many years, that's all about this process. This being human is a guest house, every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house, empty each room of furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. And let me add, as a guide from within. So you can open your eyes. And see if you can return your attention. I know this is a little bit like rubbing your tummy and patting your head at the same time, but see if you can, just from time to time, bring your awareness to the coccyx and the sense of grounding, and bring your awareness to the boundary, and see if you can let yourself also be present to the sense of flow as you listen. So I want to say something about dissociation. I'm going to say a couple of things about it. And, you know, several people have shared that at a certain point, as you get into some very strong emotion, you know, not only do you start to realize that sadness might be a mask for anger, and that there's fear in your sadness and anger in your fear, that these core emotions, and they are all core emotions, anger is not a screen emotion. Anger is a primal emotion. It's in each of us, it's connected with other emotions having to do with our own karmic tendencies and our life experience. But sadness, anger, and fear are primal emotions. And just as joy is a primal emotion, happiness is a primal emotion. And they are filled with honorable messages that help us really learn how to love and honor ourselves. But because a lot of the time they're connected with strong, triggering, intense memories or wounds and stuff that we may not even have a memory of, there will be certain moments when you actually get knocked out of presence. You can't stay with it. And, you know, it's because the feeling is too uncomfortable. And if that's the case, it's a sign that, of course, that it's probably a sign that it's something you've been holding on to since childhood. In other words, it's not just some passing thing. It's connected to some of your core historical issues, maybe even to past life karmas. But as we know, and, you know, a child dissociates because it's the best way we know how to deal with the overwhelming nature of what it's like being a kid in even the best family. You know, there's trauma in every childhood experience, whether it's, you know, the trauma of a parental disagreement or a peer thing or a physical illness or an accident. Some traumas are way worse than others, but everybody has it. And, you know, I know that as a champion dissociator, when I was a kid, my mother, who had four demanding children and a fairly hair-trigger temper, would one of her ways of creating boundaries was to lose her temper and yell. So, you know, she would, when I'd done something wrong, she would come up very close to me, grab my arm, and yell in my face, tell me what I was doing wrong, And she wouldn't stop. You know how you people are when they're angry. They want to make sure you hear it, so they go on about it. And I learned very early to just leave. I would stand there. I'd leave my body there. But I would stand outside of it, of my body, and just wait for her to be done. And this tactic was obviously handy for protecting my boundaries. But, of course, it also kept me from receiving feedback. And I, of course, as we do, I took that habit into life. So when the high school guidance counselor would, call me into the office to point out a discipline issue, I would dissociate. Whenever I was in a situation that, anybody was giving me any kind of criticism, because that's what triggered it for me, I would dissociate. And then the other way I would dissociate was by reading. So I literally spent hours reading. And, of course, no one thought this was addicted behavior, because reading is a good thing. But when I got into spiritual life, one of the first things I recognized was that I had to stop reading. I didn't read a book for almost 10 years, believe it or not. And because, at a certain point, if we're going to become present, we have to work with our dissociative tendencies. We all have them. So I'm going to just say a couple of things about it, that, and I'm going to also ask you, as we have done this week, I'm going to ask you to notice when it's happening and how you do it, not beating yourself up because you have these dissociative tendencies, because you've needed them, and there are times in our life right now when we need them. You know, dissociation helps us relax, as does distraction. It's a way of just tuning out so we can regroup. So it's only problematic when it's unconscious. And one of the ways that we can deal with this dissociation when we notice it happening is to be conscious about it, to say, okay, right now I'm choosing to dissociate because this situation is uncomfortable for me, and I'm going to take myself out of it, in whatever way, by leaving my body, by watching TV, by reading a book, by having a bowl of ice cream, but that I'm going to be conscious that I'm doing it, and I'm going to boundary it and come back by asking myself, what is it that I'm trying to avoid? And just let yourself bring the process more and more into consciousness without expecting yourself to, give up dissociation. This is true in all this work that, we can only focus as long as we can focus. The mind cannot stay focused for longer than a certain amount of time. It's different for everybody, but it's going to go into open spaciousness, or spacing out, as we call it, or some form of dissociation. Maybe we could say sort of unorganized consciousness, because we can't stay in focused consciousness all the time. So just know that. And know that the question you can ask yourself is, okay, what is it that I'm finding uncomfortable? What is it that I'm avoiding? Sometimes, you just need to relax and space out for a few minutes at the end of a busy day. So no worries, that's a good thing. But recognize that tuning into it, bringing your dissociations to consciousness, is really going to help you learn to work with dissociation in productive ways and begin to move past them. And of course, one of the great ways that we can dissociate is through spiritual practice. I'm going to say something about that in a few more minutes. Meditation and breath practice are fantastic practices for self-transformation and self-knowledge, and they also can become part of our disassociative mechanism. So this is one of the reasons why it's so important to actually do this emotional presence work. because it's going to let us, it's going to free our spiritual practice so that it's not being unconsciously used in this service of disembodiment. So one of my intentions in offering this class and in preparing this class was to give you some core spiritual and energetic practices for working with difficult emotions, both in the moment and in the sort of deeper process of what I guess we could call karmically clearing our emotional residues. As I prepared the class, I also realized that the foundational practices of it, really the skills of boundary creating and grounding, are really necessary and important for if we're going to create a safe space in which we can actually dive into our difficult and hot emotions. The reason for that is that we do need to be able to create core safety in our own bodies and a personal space that actually holds us and allows us to have a strong sense of personal identity so that we're not vulnerable to not only everything that goes on around us, but also to being seized and overwhelmed by the discomfort of some of the emotions that have become deeply lodged in us. And that said, our meditation practice, which at its best will turn us towards the true self, and the non-dual practice that we did earlier, where you recognize that everything in your experience is actually imbued with ground presence, and you learn to kind of relax and welcome and let it all be there. These are utterly core practices which we need to work with as we're working with emotions. And we also need to recognize when meditation is leading us into a bypass. And I'll say for myself, when I first began working with emotions in my body, I would notice that when I went into a physical sensation in the body, what would happen very quickly is that I would find myself in a very expanded transcendental state, which is one of the beautiful effects of meditating in the physical body. Every part of the physical body, including sensations, is a doorway into the infinite, because every part of us is imbued with Shakti. At the same time, in order to process emotions, it's necessary to be able to stay present with the sensation and feeling without prematurely going into pure spaciousness. So there's a balance that we're going to work with here, and especially those of us who have dissociation issues. So part of what we're practicing is learning to stay present with emotional discomfort when it's present, and we're going to do, a core tantric practice for doing that a little bit later. And one reason for this is that until we do that, our spiritual experiences, our states of expansion, are not going to embody. They're not actually going to be able to come into our lives. And this is the importance of the boundary practice and the grounding practice. They actually make it safe for us to let consciousness expand. And also, and this is really important, to venture into the world, into high stimulus situations, into radical participation in life. If we don't have grounding and boundaries, then the changes of life, the challenges of life, are difficult for us, and sometimes we just don't have the strength to meet them. So boundaries, grounding, and the other practice I'm going to teach you today are going to not just help you in your emotional work, but as many people have shared, in every relationship, every part of your life. Essentially, having strong grounding and boundaries lets you discern and discriminate between what's, let's say, good for you, what's giving you energy, and what's sucking your energy, without having to get angry at other people and without having to be overcautious. So it, you know, lets us judge through our bodies what's good energetic food and what's not. So so they're really, really important, as so many of you have been seeing. Okay, one more thing. One of the really great insights that I got from Carla McLaren, whose work has, you know, been very influential on what I'm doing in this call, in these calls, points out that we live in a radically traumatized society, and that as a society, because we haven't been willing to recognize and be present for the traumas in our own lives and others, we then become, as it were, carriers of dark emotions, negative emotions, confusion, trauma reactions that we, you know, kind of ooze out from all of us and infect each other. So, and one of the ways that we've historically kept our boundaries is through the unconscious use of emotions and distractions. Like the mother who snaps at her kids because that's her way of creating a boundary, you know, in a situation which, as a mother, you're being sort of overrun and overwhelmed by, you know, by children's, so to speak, natural demands. Sometimes when we're tired or overstimulated or vulnerable, we will start to get fearful or weepy. And in fact, if we use these as signals, they can help us return to self-care. And you know, and we actually do need parameters for self-care, which of course include boundaries and grounding. And of course, as you know, as we do this, as we can stay present with emotions, ask the questions that they present to us: what needs to be protected, what needs to be restored, what needs to be released, how can I rejuvenate in this moment? The more we get the glimpses that so many of you are sharing of the entanglements, the stories, the hidden truths that our disowned emotions can reveal to us. Okay, so just take a few breaths in and out and breathe through your body. And be aware of what's arising and what's present in your field at this moment. And again, this is a wake-up bell. We're going to do a practice which could be called burning your dysfunctional agreements. And those of you who worked with me before and who've worked in other, you know, traditions and practices where we actually practice dissolving karmas through the imagination, know that one of the great internal rituals for dissolving obstructions and karmic blocks is to offer them to a fire. And we'll, you know, a lot of what we'll do today is based on that recognition that when we can imaginatively do a ritual for recognizing, detaching ourselves from, and dissolving the ideas, the attitudes, the unexamined understandings that keep us stuck in our family situations and our work situations, then we actually create a capacity for freedom that will literally reorganize our consciousness in very, very palpable ways. So the kind of agreements that we're working with here are not the same as the sacred contracts that Carolyn Mace talks about. What we're talking about here is internal agreements that we've made with ourselves about how we hold our feelings, about how we hold our relationships. And, I mean, one obvious one that people in the wealth and prosperity field work with is the agreement that you may have made not to be more successful than your father, or the agreement you may have made to carry your family relationship issues, or to carry your mother's shame, or to be, to hold space for your partner to feel safe in the world, sometimes at the expense of your own safety, or to, play the role of the one who withdraws, while your partner or friend plays the role of the one who reaches out. You know, there's a zillion agreements that we might make. One of my friends was working with one today, her this inner agreement, which is of course really the one of the ways in which she's allowed herself to be ruled by a trigger that comes from childhood, is that when her husband says he'll be home at 5:30 and doesn't come home until 7:30, she interiorly defaults to rage and grief, and she decided to work with it as an agreement, and we'll do the practice that she did, which is one that you'll be familiar with because it's one that I like to work with, and she talked about how as she let herself do it, she really experienced what the idea was, what the story was, and let it dissolve. It actually dissolved, and she was able to go out to dinner with her husband and have a really good time and not carry the anger. So, it's a very useful practice. So, the agreements we want to burn are the ones that have become habitual and that are blocking our lives. Attitudes, behaviors, reactive patterns, and what we do in this practice is separate ourselves from the behavior, bring it to consciousness, which is really important, and then essentially free the karmic tendency that's bound up in it. Now, obviously, you don't free it necessarily in a 10-minute practice. It often, especially if it's a deep one, takes a while. But what this practice does do really skillfully is shift your state in the short run so that you actually can go through your life not being at the mercy of your triggers. And the more you practice it deliberately in the way we're doing, the more you get to the point where you can do it in the moment. You can, say you're having an argument with your friend or your spouse, or say you're someone said something that's, you take personally at work. You can take a minute of time out and go away and burn a few of the agreements that are the agreements you've made with yourself to have your feelings hurt, or to not speak up for yourself, whatever it may be. Another thing I would say is that we're working with, we're burning tendencies, the tendencies to behave in certain ways around anger, or to default to a mood of irritation, or to give in to others when pushed rather than confront, or of course to, dart away from painful emotions. In other words, we're working with the stuckness of emotional energy that's built up in our body and heart and mind through not allowing emotions to flow freely, because of our childhood, our personal history, and all the things in our society that militate against really, really allowing ourselves to channel emotions. So if you're unhappy about a relationship, you can burn your agreements about how you function in that relationship, not to end the relationship, but to let it subtly reorganize. And if it's an attitude, resistance, rebellion, passivity, apathy, boredom, you can burn that. If it's an intellectual construct, my favorite is, I already know this, it's my, anytime somebody tries to give me a teaching, something goes, I already know this. You can burn that, you know, allowing. So all of these, this is a practice that lets you return to present moment awareness and innocence. And you do this, you know, in this process, you actually let consciousness reorganize your responses, using the active energy of imagination to move stuck energy, and this is really significant, channel emotions in the service of freeing you from stories, freeing your energy, freeing you to move past your tendencies. And in that way, really, to evolve yourself, the family dynamics that have probably run through your family lineages on both sides for a long time, and ultimately to free the collective consciousness. So I'm going to give you the steps, and then I'll lead you through them. And I'm going to suggest that you choose one of the issues that you saw during your work with sadness and anger this week. Maybe a situation that came up, maybe some attitudes that you noticed. Recognize that when you start working with one, you'll probably find that there are others that want to come along. That's fine. But start by making a choice about what you're going to work with. You know, an idea, a tendency, or a behavior, an attitude, an experience of confusion or anxiety, a place that you're stuck in your life, whatever you feel is up for you now. An insight that arose during your work, during the week, that you want to go more deeply into. And if you like, if it helps, if you have paper and pen, you can write down what you choose, just a few words about it. And that's not necessary for now, but it might help. And also know that I'm going to send you this process so you don't have to take notes on it. You'll get it as part of your homework. So the first step is always ground yourself. Find the coccyx. Trace the line of energy down through the floor, the foundation of the building, down into the earth, the soil, the bedrock, down towards the center of the earth. Just reactivate the grounding. And reactivate your boundary, making it very, very bright. Just the edges of it, bright sun yellow, magenta, bright red. Now, inside your personal boundary space, imagine a large scroll of paper. It should be a neutral color. You know, it might even be a ceremonial parchment, you know, or some very beautiful Japanese rice paper. But it's because it's a ceremonial practice, you want to make the paper substantial, and you want to make it a roll, something that can roll. The idea is that it will absorb whatever you put into it. So just find that your sense of this scroll inside your personal boundary. Again, if you're good at visualization, you may actually kind of have an imaginative sense of it. If visualization is not your thing, just imagine that it's present. This will work even if you're not visualizing. The next step now is to imagine yourself projecting the issue, the state of suffering or confusion or emotional difficulty onto the paper. And you can write it, you can imagine yourself writing it. You know, if it's a relationship, you can actually project the whole relationship, my relationship with my mother. Just imagine it as an image or as a the thought form or as a movie, or just think it and imagine it literally flowing out from your mind and body and appearing on the scroll. You can project emotional expectations about how you're supposed to feel or express yourself. This is a really good thing to do. You can project your intellectual ideas, like how you're supposed to think, how intelligent or clear-minded you're supposed to be. You can project your ideas about how you're supposed to look, how you're supposed to function in the world, what you're supposed to achieve. You could project your spiritual ideals and expectations, or again, how you're supposed to relate to your partner or a friend. And as you project these attitudes or expectations or ideas related to the general issue that you're working with, just begin to feel what is there and write it or imagine it or just project it like a movie or like an energetic picture, or you're almost as though you're funneling the energy of this idea onto the scroll. My idea that I'm supposed to take care of everybody. My idea that I'm a victim. My idea that people are supposed to take care of me. My idea that I'm not okay if I'm not high functioning. My idea that I'm getting old. My unhappiness in a particular relationship. Whatever it is. And it's like as you put these on the paper, on the scroll, as you put them out in front of you, you are literally bringing them to consciousness, removing them from your identity field. So they're no longer, in the same way, a part of you. They are now outside of your body, still inside the personal boundary. They're on the scroll, on the paper. And as you do this, if you feel emotions arising, that's fantastic. It actually means that your consciousness is bringing forward emotions because you're being asked to use the emotion to help differentiate yourself from the ideas, the attitudes, the behaviors, the unconscious drivers that are governing your life in this particular arena. So, for example, if the emotion of anger comes up, welcome it and imagine yourself flinging the anger energy as a flame and placing it beside the idea or attitude or behavior that triggered it on the scroll. If you're scared, use the fear to push the idea onto the scroll. If you're sad, feel the sadness as a quality that will help you release. So let the emotions help you dislodge the embedded behavior. What we're really doing is making what has been a subject into an object. We're making the ideas and attitudes that we've identified with, that we've thought of as me, we're making them objects of awareness in this practice. So whatever emotions come up, recognize that you can let it help you dislodge these ideas or behaviors. In other words, you can let the emotion help you move energy from one part of your psyche to another, from one place that's identified as being inside you, to a place where you can see it as an object. It's on the scroll. It's no longer inside your subjectivity. If the scroll becomes full, roll it up and start another one. And just keep going until you feel that you've actually projected outward the ideas or thoughts or attitudes or issues that are up for you to dislodge or resolve or dissolve for this moment. When you feel done for now, roll the scroll really tightly. Imagine the scroll rolling up so that everything is hidden inside it. Tie it. Recognize that this is the sum of the dysfunctional or obstructive or outworn ideas, behaviors, attitudes, beliefs around this situation. For now, there may be more in the future, but for now. And when you're ready, imagine yourself flinging the scroll outside of your personal space, outside of your personal boundary, so it's outside of your field. And when it lands, wherever it lands, now imagine dissolving it with whatever emotional energy feels right. So I like to literally burn it, to create a bonfire, to use the bright energy of anger to dissolve this objective representation of the binding or dysfunctional issues that are affecting your emotional life. But you can also do something more subtle. You can imagine the sharp, prickly energy of fear, just blasting it into particles, or you can sweep it away, with an energetic broom, or you can imagine yourself crunching it. I like to do this, crunching it with a great fist coming out of the air, or you can literally dissolve it with the energy of sadness, using the sadness energy to surround the scroll and literally melt it, as if water were melting the density of it. Just follow the process. Don't judge it. Let it happen. And then when it's done for now, just be present with the breath. Notice your inner state. Allow yourself to be aware of what it feels like inside your energetic boundary now. What emotions are coming up? You might feel fluttery. You might feel powerful. You might feel as though you'd had a sort of amputation that happens sometimes, like when something has been released, there's like a emptiness there, like a flutteriness or a sense of not quite feeling grounded. And if that's the case, refresh your boundary and breathe. And have the sense that the energy of sadness is releasing whatever particles are left in your being, and also subtly rejuvenating your inner body. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So I'd like to take a minute or two and just see if anyone had an experience you feel like sharing with us or a question you'd like to ask about what we just did. And if there is something you want to say or ask, you can press *7. And your hand will appear on my little screen, and I'll invite you to speak. So press *7 if you'd like to speak. And if no one wants to speak, just know that you're going to have a lot of chances to ask questions on the listserv. Oh, okay. Hi.
Hi, this is Jean in San Francisco.
Hi.
Hi, Sally. Thank you. This is just amazing. I mean, it's so doable and it's so helpful. I feel like there's hope with all this emotional stuckness I've been carrying around, and it's especially useful right now, you know, with this ridiculous, these holidays where we have to be with people we don't want to be with, et cetera, and it brings up so much. And this is so doable. I mean, I was just like dreading next week, you know, just dreading certain not nice, you know? This is amazing that you can do it in the moment, or you can do it like really fill out a big scroll or just a little scroll. I'm just so thankful. God, I'm 67 years old and I found this incredible tool now.
Isn't that so great?
Yeah. So thank you.
You're so welcome.
All of this is just so valuable because I'm a very emotional being, and I'm always trying to, I love the boundary. My boundary is just glorious and floaty and bright yellow, and the smile and the arms out. I'm doing that all the time, and it's really making a difference.
That's fantastic. So great.
Yeah. So thank you.
And thank you. Thank you for doing this work. It's so great that you're doing it. And so great for all of us as well as for yourself.
Yes. Oh, I'm so grateful.
So, blessings and love. And I'm just wondering if that sort of interference on the line is from your cell phone or something, and if you...
I'll mute.
Yeah, if you mute, let's see if it's... Yeah, I think it's good. So, okay, there's someone here called Cell Phone Cincinnati, whoever you are. Would you like to say something? Hello?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I had a question. I had a pretty intense emotional experience while I was going through that, and I'm really kind of still feeling it right now.
Breathe.
But, like, I did the process, and I felt really, really sad, and I kind of put it into water and dissolved. You know, that was kind of the process I did even before you said it.
Uh-huh.
And then, but instead of kind of like, I mean, I had a lot of emotional, like, and physical pain in my head and my eyes. And then afterwards, when I put it in the water, all of a sudden, instead of really having a total release, all of a sudden, and you were talking about how the boundary filled, does it feel empty? Instead, it became filled with anger.
Okay, that's totally interesting, and if you think of the anger as the power that wants to strengthen your boundaries, and let it channel into strengthening the boundary. It sounds to me that what happened is that when you released the sadness, you met the anger that's underneath it. Do you understand what I mean? It's like,
yeah, oh. I think so.
Yeah, and that's fantastic. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, because of the story around it was being extremely hurt, and
right.
So I think it was the sad piece, but then after kind of getting rid of the hurt piece, I'm really angry about being hurt.
Yes, right on. So work with the anger, you know, like ask yourself the questions, what needs to be protected and what needs to be restored. And, you know, and then as you answer the questions, because you'll find and answers will come up, your anger knows what the issues are. And then you can begin to use the anger. You literally channel the anger into creating a brighter boundary, and maybe the resolution is, I'm not going to let this happen to me again, or I'm going to find a way to be open without being, you know, while protecting myself.
Yeah, because the other part that causes confusion for me is I have people pleasing tendencies, so
right.
You know, that was my thing, my tendency piece.
Right.
So I'm a little confusion with the people pleasing, and then when I try to protect myself, then I'm told I'm self-centered and selfish and things like that. So I have real confusion.
Yeah.
How do I protect myself and still be a giving person?
Well, this is the challenge of the people pleaser, and I'm sure that there's quite a few people on the call and people who are listening, going to listen to this later, who know exactly what you're talking about. So the thing is, once your boundary is really in place, and once you're willing to continue to work with your boundary, then and to push the anger energy, which is boundary protecting, it's self protecting power, to like channel it out to strengthen the boundary, then you can begin to realize that it is not your responsibility to hold other people's needs. You know, it's like, yes, totally people are going to call you selfish and self-centered, but you have the discernment to know the difference between self-protection and self-centeredness. And this is part of what we have to do if we've had, let's call it porous boundaries, if we believe that we have to please other people in order to be loved and in order to survive, then this is the work, you know. It's, and it's not something that happens overnight, but honestly, it's really profound, and that the boundary and the recognition that you have a right to your personal space is the foundation of it. So I think it's fantastic that you're seeing this, and I can tell you that there's an enormous amount of support for working with it, and that it works.
Okay, thank you. So, like, the I should just continue to, like, I wasn't sure when the anger came up, if I should then put that on a scroll and then try to burn the anger.
No, you don't want to burn the anger. You might want to burn the stories about it, but you want to use the anger. Remember, anger is a power emotion. You want to use the energy of anger to strengthen your boundary.
Okay.
And listen, you can do a scroll about the stories, which is a great idea.
Okay.
But you don't want to burn the anger. The anger is your friend.
Okay.
It's just you want to channel the anger so that it's not being flung onto other people. It's not being flung onto yourself, but it's actually being used as an empowerment of your boundary.
Okay.
Okay. That's fantastic.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Fantastic. Thank you. And blessings and love. I think. So, I'm going to ask everyone who has unmuted yourself to mute yourself by pressing *6. So if you've been unmuted, just press *6 and mute yourself. And we're going to go back into lecture mode right now. So, and we're going to talk a little bit about fear. So I just want you to know that this is a powerful, powerful set of practices. And remember the underlying principle: the anger, the sadness, the fear themselves are these emotions are gurus. They're instructors. They have let's call it an adaptive evolutionary purpose. What's not adaptive are the stories and the ways in which we've allowed the ununderstood quality of emotion to impact us in many ways that are not at all our fault, that have to do with our upbringing and our culture, but which we all have to work with. In the Shiva Sutras, the Shaivite text, there's a wonderful sutra which says, the ununderstood power in sound binds us. So it's like the power, the creative power within consciousness, when it's understood, can free us. When it's unconscious, not understood, then it creates all those stories, ideas, understandings about behavior. One of the big ones is, if we don't give people what they want, they're not going to love us. And because it comes from childhood, it's mixed up with survival. So if we don't give people what they want, they're not going to love us, and then we'll die. So it's a really deeply embedded, childhood adaptive mechanism that was useful when we were 5, when we were powerless. But now we get to transform it. And part of what happens as we transform it is that the powerful, essential anger, which is really the impersonal anger of the freedom-loving Shakti within us, the Durga energy, the Rudra energy within us, it becomes the engine that we can use to create the protective boundaries. And as we do that, we find that it's not like we get angry at people. It's not like we become angry people. Instead, we become strong, and it takes a little while. But it really, really works. So I want to introduce the fear topic, and we're going to work with it this week, along with along with this practice of burning agreements. So I'd like to give a drum roll for fear. So here's a drum roll for fear. Remember last week we did that rather mysterious practice of listening to the quietest sound and tuning into the intuition that lets us be alert to circumstance. And this is a very subtle way of tuning into the energy of fear. But what fear really is our capacity for focus and alertness. It's actually the capacity that keeps us at our performance edge. It's our connection to instinctual action. So again, we said last week that the question for fear is what action needs to be taken. What's the action point here? So, and when our fear is pure and when it's functioning instinctively as it should be, it becomes our capacity for clarity and action. So, you know, I'll give you an example. Suppose you're driving and someone swerves into your lane. If your instinctual fear is functioning, you'll automatically act to do what's appropriate. You'll slam on the brakes. You'll change lanes. You'll save yourself. In other words, you'll do it without even thinking. It'll be an instinctive reaction. You might say that you didn't feel fear in that moment. You were just in pure action. Afterwards, you might feel agitated or upset or fearful. So it's after the fact that what we call fear comes up. But that isn't fear. That after effect, that jangled, you know, kind of, scared thing that arises when you realize you've just narrowly escaped an accident, or in some way moved to survive. That's what we think fear is. And I'm going to say in a minute what that really is. So what we say is that perhaps, you know, when the car slipped in the snow and we turned into the swerve and we managed to, you know, keep ourselves from crashing, or even when we crashed, we didn't feel the fear while it was happening. The fear arose later. But the instinct that acted automatically to save your life is true fear. The instinct to act, to preserve your life, to function at your highest level of performance, that is true fear. So, and in the same way, when you're, let's say you're driving well, you're focused and alert and aware, or when you're in flow at work, or you're multitasking at home, you know, you're on the phone, you're talking to the kids, you're doing all the different tasks you know how to do at maximum competence. You're hardly even thinking except in a functional way. That's fear too. That's the fear that allows you to, you know, to actually smoothly flow through your life. This is flowing fear. It's like the energy of full alert competence. And when you're in that true fear, you know, which is another word for intuition, if something weird or untoward happens, you can act to avert trouble, to protect yourself and others, to meet unexpected situations. In other words, you can smother the fire, you can pick up the baby before he falls down the stairs, you can handle the office crisis, you can remember to pay your credit card bill, before it's due. You know, that's your flowing fear. It's very allied to intuition. And it is actually the result of our brilliant subconscious neurological programming. It's happening, as neuroscientists have told us, it's often happening without any interference from the conscious mind. Jill Bolte Taylor writes in her book, My Stroke of Insight, that when she was recovering from a massive left brain stroke, she instinctively knew when someone coming into her room was going to help her, give her energy, support her healing, and when somebody was going to take energy from her. And there was no mind, she just knew. So that's flowing fear. It's total intuition. So fear is not panic, terror, or worry. It's your capacity for intuitive, skillful action. And if you could learn to recognize your fear, your true fear, and name it, you'll be able to tell the difference between true fear and the blocked or obstructed fear that creates suffering and makes us feel like we're, you know, afraid to step into life. When we don't recognize true fear, then we don't identify it when it's active. Instead, we identify not with the brilliant intuitive gut instinct that's true fear, but with the aftermath. So in other words, after you avoid the accident, after you pull your kid out of the water before he drowns in the pool, before you save the situation in your life, after you've done this, you're often left with this shaky, discombobulated feeling. You feel jangled. You feel, you know, your nerve ends are unwork. You're actually discharging adrenaline because it's taken a full biochemical adrenal download to deal with the crisis. And if you're familiar with the work of Peter Levine, the trauma therapist, one of his big insights was that when animals are threatened, after they survive the threat, they'll instinctively discharge the agitation and hyperactivation that they've needed to get themselves out of danger. In other words, they'll shake or they'll run or they'll shiver or they'll tremble, and that's actually a way of discharging the adrenal energy. And when we don't do that, he says, the aftermath of the situation, the energy, the adrenal energy that needs to be discharged, stays in our system, and we experience it as trauma or what we normally call fear. And of course, when we've been genuinely traumatized, the trauma is often accompanied by intense feelings of anger and grief that make it even harder to process. So, and that's actually the big issue with our relationship to fear. A lot of you identified this during the week. Our fear and anger are so mixed up together that we don't know how to separate them. So when your boundaries are not maintained, when you don't use the anger energy to protect your boundaries, then what happens over time is that your sense of personal space and consequently your self-respect begin to be eroded. And if you think about how this happened, I mean, I've done a lot of contemplation of this, you really can feel enormous compassion for yourself and all of us who've suffered from not having healthy boundaries. So a lot of the time, the feeling of apathy, boredom, and depression are related to our inability to express healthy anger and exert control over our life circumstances. And, you know, we see this. It's such a widespread phenomenon on the planet. It's such a such a painful reality about human life. But when our boundaries are porous and impaired, we feel unsafe in our bodies, and we begin to experience chronic anxiety and worry. And I'm going to give you an analogy. A few years ago when my car was in the shop, I borrowed a friend's 1986 Jeep for about 3 days, and it was really old, not properly maintained. Tires were bald, the brakes were weak, and it happened to be winter in the central coast of California, heavy-duty rainy season, and the roads were slick and wet. And driving that car at night on those roads was like I was in a state of heightened hypervigilance, crouched over the steering wheel, terrified that the brakes weren't going to work or that the car was going to swerve or skid, because the car was not safe. You know, my own car is a well-maintained Toyota, recent Toyota, and it's like, you know, I can rely on the car. And that's kind of what happens when we don't have good boundaries. Our car is not reliable, so not only do we have to be hypervigilant, but, you know, our anger, the anger that we haven't used to create our boundaries, gets mixed up with the fear, and we, you know, we become really triggered a lot by not only the hypervigilance that we felt we had to exercise by the anxiety, but also when your true fear comes forward to protect you when you're in danger, it's too much to handle. You know, you can't focus with the clarity that healthy fear allows, and yet the adrenaline that fear brings forward will agitate your psyche in very difficult ways sometimes, and that's when anxiety becomes chronic. I think we've all experienced that to one degree or another. If you get a lot of strong exercise, you know, often you can discharge a lot of that anxiety. But for most people in the modern world, even if we're moving our bodies a lot, which is a really good thing to do, the anxiety is, you know, just a part of our psychic field. So one of the real gifts of this agreement contract burning process is that you can use it as a way to pour the anxiety into the scroll. You toss it out of your personal boundary, and you burn it or dissolve it. And this really helps over time to discharge some of the anxiety. And at the same time, it's really helpful to recognize that fear is giving you, healthy fear appears in our lives as a message about potential change. When true fear arises, it arises as an alert intuition that something is going to happen. And very often it's a message or a warning, and I don't mean a warning of disaster, but a warning that you need to be careful, maybe stop, not if you're driving and somebody swerved into your lane, but in your life, and just consider what action needs to be taken. What's the right action here? And then wait till you get a clear signal before you move. And when you learn to ask that question, really listen, you'll get an answer that will be unique to the situation. It'll be creative. It'll be intelligent. It'll be a movement of the Shakti, of the ground energy, the fundamental creative eros of the universe that's the core dynamic of consciousness. So learning to listen to your fear when it gives you that kind of signal is learning to listen to the Shakti. For example, when you feel afraid of the fact that you don't have enough food supplies to survive a hurricane, use it as a signal to go out and get yourself some canned goods and water. When you're worried about a presentation, use it as a signal to prepare. My experience of fear, when I actually listen to it, and really give myself time to hear the message, what it usually will tell me if I wait to ask is, okay, what should I do? You know, what action should I take? And as a teacher, what I found is that when I know I'm going to have to step out on a stage in front of 500 people or run a five-day retreat or a two-hour teleclass, it's the fear of screwing it up that helps me focus and prepare. So, you know, we all have this experience of how fear puts us on our edge, and it's there to help us. Just as anger is there to help us honor our individual space and sadness is there to help us release, fear is there to help us focus. So this week, I'm going to ask you to notice your essential free-flowing fear, the fear that helps you focus. Notice when it comes up, what happens when you act on it, and what happens when you try to override it. And for just a moment, we're going to do a process that, again, I'm going to ask you to do it on your own this week. And because we're coming to the end of the class, we're not going to enter deeply into a big fear releasing process. But for now, tune into your body. see if you can feel your way into how fear feels in your body, how anxiety feels in your body. See if you can find a place in your stomach, or maybe it's a tightness in your shoulders, one of the characteristic sensations of fear in the body. If there's something you're worried about, you can bring that forward and notice what it does in your body. Notice if it's sharp, if it's sinking, if it's burning, if it's a sort of jump out of your skin nervousness. Notice when you might want to dissociate from it and gently come back to the sensation. Gently welcome the sensation. The kind of slightly agitating energy that most of us know as the energy of anxiety or worry, of, let's call it, blocked fear, obstructed fear. Now, feel that there's a great protective spaciousness all around you. It's bigger than your personal boundary. Maybe it's the vast energy of the mother. But just have the feeling that you're surrounded by a protective, loving spaciousness that is holding you and the inner experience of agitation or worry or nervousness or tension or tightness. I like to think of it as the protective space of the goddess Bhuvaneshwari, whose name means she's the goddess of the space that holds physical reality. She's really literally the goddess of holding space, the divine feminine quality that protectively holds and contains all of us. So with the sense of the sensations in the body and the sense of this holding space, let yourself breathe and stay present with the feeling. Welcome the sensations in your body. And for now, just let yourself be present with the felt experience of tension or tightness, with the breath, and with the sense of the holding space. Just be present with it. Have the feeling of welcoming the energy. And allowing the breath to flow in and flow out. See if you can allow the breath, if you can actually allow the energy of breath to flow through your body and your psyche, just naturally opening up the tightness, the holding, letting go of the stories. Letting go of the stories, letting go of the thoughts, staying with the sensations and letting yourself breathe through them. So that whatever has come up, now we're moving into the just overall experience of whatever emotional energy is present in your physical and subtle body, knowing that you're held in this spaciousness. Allowing yourself to be welcomed, embraced, and held by the vastness of the loving, protective Shakti who is present in every particle of the universe and who creates and holds the space for us to recognize what we really are. To allow our essential emotions to act as engines to ensure our freedom, our skill of life, and our ability to protect ourselves, to connect ourselves, and to act with the beauty and freedom of who we really are. So if you can, sit with the breath, welcoming whatever sensations and emotions arise, letting them be there, knowing that it's all right, knowing that you're held, letting the breath flow, letting the breath flow through the body, opening, releasing, I really want to ask you to take care of yourself tonight, or if you're listening to the call tomorrow or next week, to take care of yourself for a few minutes after the call, for at least half an hour or so, and just let yourself be present with what you're experiencing. Journal about it. Thank yourself for entering this work, and know that, as you heard earlier, it's all really, really doable. And there's so much support. Support from each other, support from the lineage, support from the Shakti, from the Divine Mother, and support from your soul, from the evolutionary power that is living your life and that wants only for you to be happy and free. So, good night. You'll be getting a homework assignment, and please stay tuned to the listserv. Thank you so much for your presence, your practice, and your incredible, brilliant, insightful willingness to do this work. Have a great evening, a great week. So much love. Namaste.